With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is special guest Kevin Wall.
Hey, John, how's it going today?
It's going well. It's going well. Dan's enjoying Italy, so Kevin is here in his stead. You probably recognize Kevin's voice from one of Troy Noons and Absolute Podcast's other shows, Faster, Stronger, Orange, where Kevin has gotten some really great guests over the last few months. Kevin, how do you do it? Get such awesome people on the podcast.
You know, I've been lucky to have established a little bit of relationship with some of the folks at Syracuse and some of the athletes, was able to grab some really outstanding student athletes, you know, and Aiden Tooker and then Santita Bongwase and Paige Stoner. And so working with folks at SU now as the teams roll back into camp, to be doing some more interviews, and hopefully we get some previews and try and touch on all the sports with Faster, Stronger, Orange, and, you know, hit up some of the things that people don't hear a lot about, women's soccer and volleyball. And of course, my ties with cross country and track, people can expect to hear a lot about them coming up this year.
Awesome. Definitely looking forward to more of that. Folks that are listening now, though, probably want to hear a little bit about football, a little bit about basketball. We have both on tap today before we get into an ACC Coastal preview. Yes, we are getting to that point in the offseason where this podcast is actually talking about conferences that you care about. First and foremost, Dino Babers' quote today, which was pretty excellent. I'll read it for those who weren't on Twitter or weren't on the blog. When passing the media room today, he remarked, "You guys ever tried iced coffee? I don't know why anybody would do illegal drugs when there's iced coffee." It's a classic Dino quote. It's Andrew Graham, who captured it from Daily Orange, said it was pretty much context-free. He happened to have a coffee in his hand. But otherwise, like, there was really not a lot of, like, stage setting for this one. Kevin, do you think this is top five already in terms of Dino quotes?
I mean, it's up there. I still think the Andre Sisco ACC Media Day one is going to be tough to top. I mean, talking about going to Walmart and picking up some buys and tries and just dropping that out there, like, that was gold to me. And, you know, the iced coffee one is just Dino, man. He I wouldn't be surprised if he's got a sponsorship deal by the kickoff of the first game. Someone should be. And if they're not, I know SU partners with Dunkin', and they should be all over that right away.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, I know SU already works with Dunkin', so this should be a no-brainer to get him advertising immediately.
Yeah, so we'll have to see, though, if Dino is really adapted to Syracuse and if he's going iced coffee in February, because that's the true test.
We will see. Also on the football front, La Familia had episode 3 this week. We saw a little bit less talking, a little bit more music. I didn't pick up everything that was on there, but I wasn't, like, listening super intently. Right. I think I heard Explosions in the Sky, like, you're now, like, typical, like, ever since Friday Night Lights, you know, football, like, training soundtrack / montage, right. Some other hip hop tracks. Also good to just, like, get a little bit more of a look at Kendall Coleman. I know this has been, like, one of the defining characteristics of the series so far, is just the fact that we're finally, like, shining a light on all of these, like, you know, some long time, some, like, short term players, right. Who have these cool backstories and personalities and things like that. And they're either well-trained media wise, or they're just savvy in general and understand, you know, how to be in front of a camera. So, and Kevin, what's been your favorite part so far, other than, you know, Tommy DeVito being everything we ever hoped he'd be?
I mean, I think it's getting to know these student athletes. And, you know, we've talked about it for a while now, that's one of the things that we felt Syracuse needed to do, is to help people in the community get to know these players besides what they see. And when you get to know these athletes and know a little bit more about them and some of the things that are important to them, it sways the people in the community. You know, it makes it a little bit easier sometimes to convince people to throw their support. I mean, you think of someone like Kendall Coleman, and I was really impressed to hear more about Mo Neal and his background. I mean, it's just some things that we haven't gotten a really good glimpse of from the college students. And part of the reason why I wanted to do the podcast was try to shine a light on some of these student athletes and bring these interesting stories to the forefront, because, you know, we've got a great fan base that loves to hear more about these athletes. And you know, you see a lot in basketball. And, you know, it's a little bit easier when you see their faces and you see them so often. And with football hidden behind the helmets and the pads, you know, to get some insight. And, you know, you got a defensive lineman that's also a poet. And, you know, you just it's a lot of fun for me to get that side. You know, the stuff that's sort of like the Hard Knocks, the camp, that's all cool and everything. And but to see the players and get to see a little bit of their personality, I think is a great use of the platform and sort of the direction the program's going. I would imagine this is going to really resonate with recruits as well.
Yeah, I mean, props to the SU video team for, you know, just doing such a great job. I think especially in the last year, they've really upped their game and they've really kind of set a new standard for what SU's athletic teams, you know, can do. I just in terms of like social media sharing and video in general, like this is just, it does speak to, yeah, like you said, like what resonates with kids today. Like, you know, whether you're going to appear on national TV super often or not, like, you know, getting the opportunity to have like this platform and a feature on yourself and be able to, like most people do, talk about yourself for a little bit and share some insights, like that could be a deal breaker when looking at, you know, between, do you want to go to Syracuse? You want to go to like maybe an Iowa State or a Kansas State or another school like that might not have the same sort of, you know, vibrant communications department or the vibrant, you know, video department. Like this is an exposure opportunity, just right. Like the ACC network is an exposure opportunity, just like other options, you know, other things that SU has at its disposal are an exposure opportunity. So yeah, I hope that that a lot of these kids, you know, that it resonates with them, and a lot of the kids that are already on campus, hope they're able to take advantage and kind of introduce themselves. Cause I feel like, you know, I think under Scott Schaefer, there was a little bit of an insular approach to media. And I think under Dino, like while Dino is very savvy and also like understands where and when to let media in, I think that we're now moving past the, like at this point, there's hardly any Schaefer era players left on campus. I think that we're moving past like the, like kind of like, you know, media blackout that might've been instituted under that regime.
And I saw today that two of the assistant coaches are going to be appearing with Galaxy Communications. So that's the first time that Dino's had assistant coaches doing sort of media rounds as well. So I think you know, I think that maybe is a trust with him and the staff. And, you know, so yeah, that was a big step along with Eric Dungy, who's going to be back in town doing some work. So the fact that the assistant coaches are going to now be talking is another step forward. And, you know, with that ACC network and the capabilities of Newhouse and the students, I'm hoping that we see these sort of profiles done more for not just football, but reaching out to other sports as well.
Yeah. I mean, in general, like this does seem like a little bit of a, like between the video series and then like all these announcements around who's going to be available. I think we're starting to see the, maybe the athletic department overall, or at least the football program, like kind of turn a new leaf there. I know, like, you know, Stephen Bailey has definitely been one to raise some eyebrows every time, like, you know, Syracuse media hasn't been able to get maybe a reasonable amount of access. And I think like whatever's been said either publicly or behind closed doors definitely resonated, because I know, you know, Stephen even remarked, you know, how long he was able to be at practice and how much video they were able to get. And part of that's probably a trust thing between Dino and the media too. Like, I think he sees, and SU Athletics knows at this point, like SU media, us included, just want to see these programs be successful. And
right,
like ultimately, if they're not, but you're doing the right thing while they're not, we're fine with it.
Right.
Because we're seeing us building towards something more positive on the other end. Now that Dino's had the 10-win season, you know, I think he also has more trust in himself and everything else, where, you know, he's like, all right, like people know what we're about at this point. Everyone has the tape. Like, everyone knows we're not going to catch anybody by surprise this year. So I think that that element of surprise and that like coming out of nowhere factor that we probably had for much of last year, I think is also gone. So he figures, all right, you know, watching Tommy throw a couple of balls isn't really going to do anything for Florida State or Clemson necessarily.
Well, you know what doesn't hurt is that Clemson wins the national title, and they're probably one of the most open programs, and their use of their own internal sort of social media and the access they provide to national reporters. I was listening to Marty Smith on Levitard the other morning, and he was talking about how he should have an apartment in Clemson. He's there so often, but he talked about how, you know, they go where teams are winning. And if you want to be a winning program and media want access, then if you're going to shut them out, they're not going to come back. And I think Clemson being open to the media and then still winning football games kind of helps some of that mentality of, oh, wait, maybe we don't have to, you know, draw the curtains closed and circle around and put up these, you know, barriers that, that we can, you know, they're doing it. You know, there's, like you said, there's no secrets. You let people watch a little bit, you let them inside to get to know the athletes, and it's a win-win.
Yeah, whoever, whether Dino or somebody else on staff, whoever decided that that we're getting a little bit more open this year, thank you. Happy to continue, you know, writing about everything, and can't wait to have some more great stories about this team. Shifting focus a little bit for the time being to basketball, however, gonna be a little shorthanded in Italy. I don't think that really matters in terms of results. The results themselves don't really matter. At the same time, I think it'll be fun to see what this team can do without Marek, without John Ball Ajak. Like, there's going to be a very young and very inexperienced team out there, but this is the sort of group that, you know, could potentially gel really well here, try out some new things. I think we're going to see a lot of Bryson Goodine, a lot of Jalen Carey, a lot of Joe Girard. Like, again, don't really care about what the results are necessarily. Right. I'd love to see, as you would too, just some new offensive sets, maybe a little more, you know, running involved on offense, a little more transition ball, and some more threes from some actual 3-point shooters, which may be the case for this group.
Right. And everybody says that the shooting's much improved this year. And so it'll be interesting to see what kind of lineups Jim Boeheim throws out there. You know, will he play, you know, Buddy at forward with Girard and Carey, or Goodine and Girard, and how will he mix and match players while they're down a couple guys? I'm curious to see what kind of opportunity this will be for Jesse Edwards. I think with Barama Sidibe returning from injury, they're probably going to watch his minutes in these games, you know, rightfully so. And so Edwards now becomes the second center on the tour. So, you know, a guy who was a late sign, you know, maybe weren't expecting much, but now he's got an opportunity to show himself in some competition. And so, you know, will he seize that opportunity? Will Robert Braswell, you know, take that leap forward and make the most of getting some extra minutes in these games? Because this could be a springboard for those guys to open eyes heading into, you know, preseason practice.
Yeah, I mean, as some may recall, like, you know, before the 13-14 season, SU had a pretty, like, young, like, team that was turning over a bunch, and they went to Canada, did reasonably well, but more importantly, like, the team was able to coalesce and was able to, like, kind of create the chemistry that in part, like, set the tone for that 25-0 start. Like, I don't think we're going to start 25-0 this year. At the same time, like, these are just a lot of kids who are not necessarily like well-versed in the zone yet. They're not well-versed in rotations. They're not well-versed in just playing the college game. So I think for me, like the most critical piece here is just going to be the comfort level and like how these kids, I mean, obviously these aren't NCAA games necessarily, but just how these kids look like in these game scenarios with each other. And if we see, to me, most importantly, if we see that progress from game one to game four, like of them looking like they're just in a better groove together. And you start again, like most importantly, start seeing that zone look probably cleaner from game one to game four. I think that'll be a huge sign and maybe a really nice boost for this team going forward.
Right. And it's important this year because you get two preseason games and then you get Virginia to open up the season. So, I mean, this is a group that's not going to be able to ease their way in through the non-conference, you know, and get five or six sort of easy games before they get tested and thrown out there. And even though Virginia lost a lot, you know, they're going to bring back some guys who are on that title team. And so you got to be ready to go right in November. So that'll be exciting. And so this tour gives that group, like you said, the extra opportunity to work out some of the kinks, especially in the zone, and be ready to go in November.
Yeah, in general, like this is, you know, you mentioned Virginia. I think in general, the start to the season is pretty tough. Like, you don't have to run through the whole thing, but, you know, after Virginia, they get Colgate, Seattle, Cornell, Bucknell, like manageable games at home. I think Cornell could be better. I think Bucknell could be better. Seattle wasn't as bad as you might think last year. Like, Colgate was reasonably good. And then, like, you get Oklahoma State and the either Ole Miss or Penn State down at Barclays. Like, SU, as we've talked about on the site, has played pretty poorly in the boroughs in recent years. So I think this is a huge, huge opportunity for them. I don't think you're going to see a lot of OK State or Ole Miss fans, but you're probably going to see a lot of Penn State fans, despite the fact that they're not really a basketball school. We should be able to own this event and pick up two, you know, quad two-ish wins at the very least.
Right.
But I think how we do there really, and how we kind of manage that stretch after the Virginia game and going into these Brooklyn games is probably going to decide, you know, kind of quite a bit about where we're headed. I know this is probably going to look a lot like, 2015-16 perhaps, and how we kind of traverse what ends up being like a tougher schedule, but we'll see. I'm excited. I think the Italy games are going to at least give us a bit of a hint on what's coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Cool. I think we're good. Actually, no, one more thing before halftime.
All right.
Kevin, how did you feel knowing that Syracuse was going to be ranked in the coaches poll almost undoubtedly before it came out? How did you feel though to see a number next to Syracuse's name after so many years of it not happening to start a regular season?
Man, it's a good feeling to start off there, you know, to have that, to flip through top 25 previews and wonder not, who's going to be there, like to see, where Syracuse is going to be. I mean, it's the first time in a long time we've actually had to go through previews and kind of make a list of where the rankings are. Instead of the, what are the comments about how bad Syracuse is going to be now? And so, you know, it's exciting. You know, you can tell around here in the community that people are definitely looking forward to the season. There's more talk about it than there's been in such a long time. Probably since the first Marone game, you know, people were excited about him coming in and the hope, I think at that point, the desperate hope that somehow someone would help restore football. But this is fun, and to be there heading in is going to be interesting to watch and see how the team sort of responds, because they're not going to sneak up on anybody this year. But man, it's nice to have a number besides the name when you're looking at Syracuse on whatever website.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, as I know, I'm not as long suffering perhaps as many other fans. I did watch the team growing up. Wasn't the level of fan that I was once I got onto campus, obviously, but I've definitely been through, mostly the lows.
Probably,
unfortunately,
the most painful.
Yeah, I'd argue like the getting to campus at the end of 2006, definitely not the most enjoyable time on campus. And then like, you know, when I started like paying more weekly attention when I was in high school, things were already like headed south.
Right.
At the end of the Coach P years, I have only like glimmers of like the late McNabb years going into like kind of the swan songs for Coach P. But yeah, it's definitely nice to actually have like some positive football memories now that I can bank on. It's altered my kind of viewpoint on the team and the program and writing about them, which is nice, because I mean, for basketball, I had a little bit of both.
Right.
Shaping my experience, but in football, like largely defined by the negative, you do kind of, it does start to affect your psyche around the team and how you write about them. So it's nice to get a balance there.
I mean, you go in with some optimism and not, can this team find six wins, you know? And now you're going in like, okay, well, you know, we're assuming that six is sort of rock bottom for a group, you know, like that's the bad, bad outcome. And instead of, oh, can we find some way to somehow squeak out six wins? And so definitely much more exciting to have football season approaching when you've got that sort of ray of sunshine and you're like, oh, let's see what they can do this year, as opposed to, oh, what is this going to turn into?
Yeah, and obviously, like the devil on the other shoulder is like just letting us get as positive as humanly possible, so that we can get smacked down.
That's the Syracuse fan in you.
I know. One more thing on the poll, I guess. Did you agree with 22nd? Do you think that there's anyone ahead of us that we're better than? Do you think there's anyone behind us that we're worse than?
I think. It seems fair, because I think there's a big question from a lot of people around the, how do you replace Eric Dungy? You know, I was talking with the Virginia Tech podcast folks last night, and that was like, oh, you must be really concerned about the quarterback. And I'm like, well, actually more probably concerned with the offensive line than the quarterback. And maybe, you know, what we saw in the glimpses of Tommy DeVito last year gives us more hope, because we think of the Florida State and the North Carolina games, where I think a lot of the maybe national folks looked at the Notre Dame game and sort of they're thinking, oh, gee, Dungy went out and then Syracuse didn't look competitive. And I actually think that there are a couple plays that could have changed that game. You know, there looked like a pass interference, no call on Nykeem Johnson, you know, on DeVito's first pass, and then a tip ball that gets returned, intercepted and returned. So I don't think he was that poor of a QB in that game. But I think for a lot of people, that's the last memory of him. And so they just look at the numbers and say, oh, gee, Dungy accounted for so much of the offense. Who's going to replace him? Oh, that Tommy DeVito kid. He didn't look so good against Notre Dame. But
he was also he was able to come back from like three touchdowns down and dig. I mean, yeah. They know you're going to pass, so right. You're passing.
And he was thrown into a very difficult situation against a good team, you know. And so I think we might have err to the side of optimism with him and look at, you know, where he was as an Elite 11 QB and what the coaches, you know, how badly they wanted him for this offense, and how he was the first guy Dino Babers, you know, really wanted to get to be his quarterback. And other people just look at the stats and look at Dungy, and not to take anything away from Dungy at all, but I think so for a lot of people, that's kind of a prove me that you're ready to take over for a guy who's been, let's face it, he's been the face of the Syracuse football team for 4 years, and Eric. And so, you know, in the way he played, he had a lot of fans, even of opposing teams, who could appreciate sort of that warrior mentality that he brought. And so I think that's a reason why Syracuse might be finding itself in 22. And again, preseason poll, it's just pure speculation. And the good thing is it'll sort itself out as you get through the season.
Agreed. Kevin, why don't we take a quick break for our sponsor?
Sure.
And we're back, a little bit of halftime. Kevin, I totally understand if you are not prepared to talk about what you drank this past week, but what have you drank this past week?
But I can tell you that I've been going through a couple different sessions. One was the Founders All Day, and the other is the Southern Tier session IPA. And personally, I would lean towards the Southern Tier. I'm not as in tune with the craft beer scene as you or Dan or Andy or Steve, but you know, it's been a warm summer here, so I've been enjoying some sessions lately.
Can't blame you there. On my end, I've mentioned this one a couple times. Luponic Distortion from Firestone Walker, the 13th edition of it. Really delicious beer. Again, IPA, but only 5.7%. So super light, basically a session. Had from Tarot, the brewery sour, you know, label there, Take My Hand. That was a really good kind of sour blonde. Had Stone Tropic Thunder Lager. It's always a staple around here. Speaking of sessions, I had an Easy Jack session from Firestone Walker. Went to a new spot down in Lomita, not too far from me, Burning Daylight Brewery. And I had their Bubbles, which is a pale ale. Actually ended up getting a growler of that. Their Burning Jays IPA was a West Coast style, thankfully for me, because I get super bad heartburn from hazies. and a local lager. It was like a really good IPL. So great that I found a new spot. Great that it's close enough that I can kind of pop down there whenever.
Nice, nice, nice. And you ruffled some feathers with your craft brewery rankings on
always.
The site. Yeah.
As always, the Virginia Cavaliers fans are, as for some reason, super thin-skinned about this and most things, but in particular, this one. I wouldn't say all Hoos fans. I enjoy plenty of Hoos fans, in particular a lot of the guys and gals over at Streaking the Lawn. That said, Virginia fans do get super prickly about this list every year.
It's
guess
surprising to me, because I thought Charlottesville natives only drink Dreaming Tree wine.
I would say for Charlottesville natives, just get better beer like in the actual city. Because like you have really good breweries. The problem is everybody else in the ACC does too, save Virginia Tech. So as I mentioned in the post, I think every city for the most part, even Virginia Tech, like all those schools have gotten better beer over time. But the problem is everything's kind of increased at the same rate.
Right.
So yeah, even the cities that have gotten better over time can't really move up. We saw a little bit of fluctuation at the top because I keep changing the requirements specifically to keep people guessing and make things a little more varied. But yeah, for those who haven't read that, go for it.
Right. And we have a bunch of Syracuse folks down in Charlottesville with the Reebok Boston Club. So we can send them some good Central New York beer, craft beers down there so they can get a good taste.
I'm sure this is going to be quoted somewhere.
It probably will, and I'll take all the heat for that.
That's fine. Now we move on to, we're going to end up talking about Virginia at some point.
Yeah.
Our ACC Coastal preview. As everybody knows, we went conference by conference all offseason. We now move on to the last two episodes of that endeavor, where we split the ACC into divisions because we didn't want to leave anything out with our conference mates in particular. Right off the top, Kevin, who do you think is winning the Coastal? I know everyone's kind of just answering this with a shrug face this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, who do you pick? I think I would probably give Virginia the edge heading into the season. You know, with Bryce Perkins at quarterback and Bryce Hall in the secondary, and Virginia Athletics has been on quite a good run lately. So I think heading in, I think in college, if you've got a quarterback and your quarterback situation is solid, that's where I'm going to give them the edge. I don't think there's a big difference in the Coastal right now, at least coming into the preseason. Virginia, Miami, maybe Pitt and Virginia Tech are a little bit step behind those teams in terms of talent. But I think right now I'd give Virginia that nod.
Yeah, I think not that I want to just, you know, play the same sort of, you know, angle you have here. But yeah, I think Virginia, you know, had a lot of close games last year and was very close to being even better than they actually ended up being at 9-4. I think looking in the division, like they're at Miami, yes, and they're at Pitt. Both of those are probably going to decide a lot. I'm not that high on Pitt, but I think Syracuse fans are always by default like two games lower on Pitt than they probably end up being.
Right.
But like tough games against potentially Duke, Virginia Tech, both at home. Georgia Tech, who might actually like know what the hell they are in November, that one's at home. I think really the Virginia Tech game could end up deciding the division, even if I think the Hokies are kind of coming undone a little bit. I think it helps that Virginia and Virginia Tech have two of the best quarterbacks in the conference.
Right.
And that should probably carry both. But Virginia in general, I think, has one of the better defenses in the conference. Like you mentioned, Bryce Hall, who's an All-American candidate. In general, the secondary has been really good. And I think with some, you know, veteran linebacker play back and Eli Handback, who is one of the better defensive tackles in the conference. Like this just seems like a group that even if the offense steps back a little bit with replacing most of the offensive line, I think there's still a good bet to win at least like 7 or 8 games.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, that first week is going to tell a lot, you know, them traveling to Pitt in the opener and you know, Virginia Tech goes to Boston College. And, you know, I just, you know, we'll learn a lot from that first week. I need Miami to show something on offense. I mean, since they joined the conference, all I've heard from people is how the U is back every year. The U is back. And they're loaded on defense. But, you know, can Dan Enos say, get that quarterback situation settled? I mean, they've got skill, but I kind of want to see, is it going to be Tate Martell? Is it going to be Nakosi Perry? You know, who's going to take the reins for them and be able to deliver when they need to? Because that defense was really good last year, and it wasn't enough because the offense just couldn't get it done, which is really odd for Miami not to be able to do it.
Yeah, I think that was a great segue into Miami. Their quarterback position's been really weird of late. You have that much exposure to, South Florida offensive talent. I feel like you should be a lot better. At running back, they are pretty good. I think DJ Dallas and Lorenzo Lingard are both, you know, two of the better running backs in the conference.
Right.
I think that the problem is, like, every team in the league, for the most part, can throw the ball at least reasonably well. And like, Miami's kind of the outlier right now, which is unfortunate, because like, this defense for them, like, if the offense was even like slightly above average, this defense would be able to carry them without much issue to a division title here.
Right.
You know, despite kind of the cluster, because Miami is the most talented team in this division by a mile. They just haven't really been able to put it together. And realistically, and like, you can tell me if you disagree, I'm not necessarily sure that Manny Diaz is the guy to coax the most talent out of this group, even if I think he has shown himself to be a pretty good coach at the assistant level. I'm just not sure if, you know, he's the guy that's going to be able to kind of figure out, oh, the offense has this missing piece, and we're going to be able to kind of triumph through it. I think he, in year one, at least, could be the coach that the offense has this missing piece, and you're going to very much see it every weekend.
Yeah, he's very interesting to me. I like him. I like what he's trying to do. It really kind of bring back that swagger, that mentality. You know, we thought they had it with the turnover chain, but that didn't really carry forward, you know, when they weren't winning games. But it's tough to read on him. You know, is he going to be able to make that adjustment as a first-time head coach who has focused on the defensive side of the ball to be able to either step in, you know, and take over when the offense is struggling, or is he going to step and be totally hands off? And so I'm really curious to see what they look like against Florida in that week zero game, because they're really trying to – I think it's important for the conference if Miami's sort of back just because of the attention they bring nationally. But I'm not ready to hand them the Coastal until I see a little bit more from both Diaz and the quarterback situation.
Yeah, to be honest, I think we're going to know everything about Miami's season by October 11th.
Yeah.
Like Florida in that week zero game. Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's a week zero game. Sorry. Yeah. You got Virginia Tech on October 5th and Virginia on October 11th. I'd be surprised if anyone but, you know, UVA, Virginia Tech, and Miami won the division. I've been surprised about this division before, however. But
Like last year
and several other seasons. But in general, like, I do think that there's a little bit of a tiered system this year, injuries aside, that, like, yeah, Miami could – if Miami's 3-3 at the end of the October 11th game against Virginia, there is zero chance that they're playing for the Coastal title, and they could be in a lot more trouble potentially. But if they're 4-2 or even 5-1 – I mean, I think 4-2, if the two losses to Virginia – Tech and Virginia, I think my 3-3 point still stands. If they're 5-1 or 6-0, like, Miami's a top 10 contender and in the class of the Coastal by a long shot.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot in the ACC that we're going to know in that first month of the season.
Very, very true for Syracuse as well. But I think that's a conversation for the Atlantic Division
exactly.
Next week. moving around the conference, well, the division a little bit. Talk a little bit about Duke. I'm still crushed that the NFL team that I pretty much have disowned at this point drafted Daniel Jones as early as they did.
Yeah.
But the cupboard's not bare for them. Obviously, Deion Jackson's back. Most of the line's back. Quentin Harris actually looked pretty good at quarterback. When he saw the field last year, he had 437 passing yards and 7 touchdowns. His action... defensively, they're actually looking really good. And that, I mean, Mark Gilbert is potentially not looking good to be active or as active as people thought. Nonetheless, like, you get away from the linebacker position, the rest of this defense is really experienced. They're very good. I think it's probably one of the better Duke defenses that David Cutcliffe has had, and that should concern Syracuse fans at least a little bit. But I'm actually pretty like bullish on Duke. I think they can go 6-6 this year. I think starting in versus Alabama in Atlanta is bad, but just a poor idea. But the rest of it, like, the only like sure loss on the schedule other than Alabama is really Notre Dame. And I mean, I even include Syracuse as not a sure loss. I think SU might actually lose to Duke, but they're a team that you might not know the full story of the season by October 12th or so, but at the same time, like, you probably have a pretty good read for where they're headed with three divisional games, Virginia Tech, Pittsburgh, and Georgia Tech in succession in that, like, you know, late September, early October area.
So what I look at for Duke is, you know, back a couple years ago when Louisville played Alabama in the first week and got throttled, and things just, you know, the snowball caught fire in Louisville. And I think Cutcliffe is different than Petrino, obviously, personality wise. But when you start off your first week in a situation like that, you know, what sort of lingering impact does that have on a team? And, you know, can you protect your quarterback so they don't get hit so often in that first week that they are gun shy heading into further weeks? But I like Cutcliffe. I think he's a good coach. I agree with you. I don't think they'll fall off as much as people might be thinking after losing Daniel Jones, because he's proven and he's able to kind of tweak his system to the talent.
And also, they played well without Daniel Jones last year.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, when you have a good coach that's proven that he's able to win some games, I think, you know, I tend to give them the benefit of the doubt, you know, going back to what we were talking about with Manny Diaz, whereas Cutcliffe was able to adapt, you know, to his team who lost their big weapon and still able to win games. And so it's just, for me, is what, you know, can they, I mean, not only getting an Alabama team, but you're getting an Alabama team that was humbled in their last game, and they're going to be out to send a message that first week.
Speaking of first week messages, Georgia Tech, kind of our next team to talk about here, and they face Clemson at Clemson in week one. It's one of the ACC Network kind of kickoff games on the 29th. This seems like a terrible idea for them, considering that they're not just the whole new coaching staff and a whole new system, but transitioning away from, you know, a kind of spread option, wishbone type deal. It's falsely usually referred to as a triple option. In this case, it really isn't. But nonetheless, it's done. Georgia Tech now gets to recruit actual Atlanta athletes to play actual football. And that's going to take a couple years. They're going to be really good potentially in the trenches, or they would be if they returned any talent there.
Right.
I think this is going to be a really rough season for them, but, you know, maybe November they can start to pull things together, even if, well, I'd say they would start to pull things together in November, if not for a brutal schedule to close the season. Pitt at UVA, Virginia Tech, NC State, Georgia. That's a recipe for disaster. Even if if things start clicking, you could lose every one of those games pretty easily.
Right. I mean, I look at Georgia Tech and I think their season is about, are they going to be the coastal spoiler? And so they get Virginia Tech, NC State, and Pitt all at home. And so they could actually be the team that sort of decides the coastal. If they can sort of get that new system together, and sort of, they might be out of bowl contention at that point, but they could be that team that knocks off somebody late that pushes one team out of that ACC championship race. And so I'll be curious to see how they sort of respond over the year. It's just, I think the whole schedule is rough because you've got they're at Duke and at Miami. And so it's just going to be a long year for them. And I'd be curious to see how well they're able to continue to recruit as they shift to this new system. And will they become a threat again? And how quickly?
Yeah, I think they'll be all right recruiting, if only because, like, A, you're near the local talent base. B, I think Jeff Collins is going to kind of start fresh.
Yep.
And I mean, we've already seen, like, SU's already lost a four-star wide receiver to them. I think, like, players understand, like, if you come in, it's just like Syracuse in recent years. Like, you come in, if you're a highly talented recruit, you might play right away.
Yes. Yeah.
You might play right away. You might be able to hit the field right away. And, like, that's an opportunity in a Power 5 conference, especially in Georgia, that, like, doesn't come every day. So I think that they'll be all right. I know we face them next year. So I'm hoping that they're not necessarily done with this reclamation project yet. Also face them at the Dome, which will be at least like mildly helpful. And this time we won't decide to switch to a 3-4 defense week of the game.
Yeah, just let's thank God. Thank God we won't be doing that. So
thank you, Scott Schaefer.
Yeah, the last couple of Georgia Tech Syracuse games have not been pretty. So
yeah,
hopefully we can return the favor next year.
Fingers crossed there. North Carolina would be our next team, another squad that is looking to kind of fix things a bit. They hired Mac Brown, which is questionable, but seems to be working from a recruiting standpoint somehow.
Yeah, they didn't hire Greg Robinson.
So. They almost hired Greg Robinson, and that was awesome. I really thought that like we'd reached like peak parity where the internet just became real life.
Oh, that was just so disappointing for all the folks that cover in the Carolina media. But
Carolina media is disappointing for us.
Yeah. But man, yeah, Mac Brown. Boy, I thought Larry Fedora was a good hire for them. And before he declared his war on football, which he lost, couldn't win that battle. I thought, you know, he would be a guy that could help that team. And boy, after they lost Mitchell Trubisky, then the wheels fell off there. And then to go back to Mac Brown is just sort of a real question mark and a head scratcher from especially where the rest of the ACC seems to be going. You know, it doesn't seem to fit that sort of trend and where the conference and some of the other coaching hires that schools have made recently to sort of go back to Mac Brown in this, all right, we're going to reach back to the glory days. I just, I don't see how this works unless they figure out some sort of succession plan in the next couple of years, because I think it's going to be a challenge for them to keep a lot of the in-state talent away from NC State and even in Duke. With Mac there, just the questions that are going to be surrounding him and his longevity.
Yeah, I mean, the longevity stuff, I think, is the biggest concern. I think the fact that he like kind of fixed the hiring process after like when it looked like he was going to entertain Robinson and some other people, I think he's actually done like a decent job. And like I said, he's recruiting well so far. The fact that he, you know, ended up going in on air raid, you know, brought in former Ole Miss OC Phil Longo. Like, I think that's a smart idea. I don't know if Longo's like the succession plan. I think that
right.
Like you said, though, like there needs to be kind of that next step. And whether it's Longo or somebody else, like you need to kind of have that next guy up and ready to go. And UNC should be able to at least theoretically pay to keep that guy around for a couple of years while you let, you know, Brown coach, whether it's 4 or 5 seasons, and just kind of act as placeholder and like, you know, home fixer. He isn't necessarily like, he's been that, I guess, for UNC and for Texas. The problem is like, that's not really how his career has been defined.
Right.
So I'm curious.
I'm curious though, is like, if they do lose a couple games and the offense struggles, is he going to continue to let Longo run his system? Or is he going to be one of these coaches that's going to say, I know what works, and revert back? That's the question I have, is when you have a head coach and they're changing their system and their philosophy to fit, whether it's what the administration wants or the boosters want or what they think they need to do to win, is it sounds great on paper, but when it's not happening on the field, do they grab that control? And then what happens there? What happens with the personalities there? And so that would be my question with UNC this year is, you know, is Mac going to let the system, is he really going to let control go on that side of the ball? Are they really going to run the air raid? Or if they lose a couple of games, is he going to say, all right, no, I got to go back to what I know works because I was successful with it? And so that's always a question I have when you have sort of coaches who are sort of balancing systems like that. It's one of the things that is going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think they are going to lose a couple games at least early. You got South Carolina, Miami, Wake, App State, Clemson to kind of start the season. Like, this is an UNC team that, even if improved, and I think they should be improved to some extent, like, could be 0-5. Really don't know who's going to play quarterback yet. I know Sam Howell is a 5-star guy. UNC's, like I said, done a decent job recruiting, and Mac Brown really helped them kind of like resuscitate that class at the end of the 2019 cycle. I mean, we know for a fact, too, like, just because you install an up-tempo system doesn't mean it works right away. Obviously, UNC has better athletes to start that process, but it doesn't mean all of them are necessarily fits for the up-tempo, you know, kind of spread type system that they're implementing right away.
If you're one in four at the end of September, though, is he going to stay the course this year and just understand that this is going to be, there's going to be bumps and that it's not about necessarily the wins and losses, but getting that system in place and sort of, you know, revitalizing, re-energizing the program again. So it'll be curious to see. It's like the Miami situation. You know, really, with some of these new coaches, I'm really curious to see what happens and how they handle adversity and how they respond and what that means for the team.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's a decent amount back on defense. I think the fact that they get a clean slate on offense, like SU when they transitioned to Baber's system, didn't have much of a clean slate. This group gets to pretty much start over if they want to, which could actually be helpful. While defensively, like there's enough returning talent there, even though the defense wasn't that great, there's enough returning talent there that, you know, the wheels might not necessarily fall off. I think this team could press for six wins, but more realistically, we're probably looking at four or so. And that's, yeah, like you said, that's kind of fine in year one. If you see that progress over the course of the season, and maybe you hang with a Virginia or you hang with Pitt or NC State toward the end of the year, I think that's a successful first go at it.
Right.
Who have we not covered yet? Oh,
we didn't really talk about Pitt.
Well,
and I tell you, we talk about, you know, you look at early season with Pitt, Virginia, Ohio, Penn State, UCF.
You could lose every one of those games.
You know.
Please do it.
And then, like, you know, what's going to happen? And I think, you know, college football to me is so much about the momentum and games that swing. And so that first week against Virginia is going to be such a big game for both teams. Pitt's home, so if you can you know, hold that home field advantage, and then if you can beat Ohio at home, and then if you lose at Penn State and come back, you know, you're 2-1 with hosting UCF. But if you lose to Virginia, and even if you beat Ohio, now if you're 1-2, you know, after Penn State and hosting UCF, you know, if you're 1-3 and there's still one game left in September, man, that's a tough thing for a college team, I think, to rebound from. And so I'll be really curious with a lot of these coastal teams is, you know, what are they going to look like that at the end of September? You know, what's the conference going to look like? And then how's it going to play out the rest of the way?
Yeah, I mean, as mentioned, I know most Syracuse fans are like two games lower on Pitt than Pitt ends up. I've got them at 4-8, so maybe they go 6-6. I just don't see them as like a really... They're not a dynamic offense, and like replacing both running backs from last year, like Kadri Ollison and Darren Hall are both out. Yeah. They were both 1,000-yard rushers. Like having to replace almost the entire offensive line aside from, you know, Jimmy Morrissey. Like they have wide receivers, but I don't trust Kenny Pickett to throw to them. I also think that like Pat Narduzzi is kind of overrated as a head coach. You know, he rode kind of the success of that Matt Canada year.
Yeah.
To like a lot of credit, maybe undue credit. When you look at what Pitt's really been since then, like they haven't looked that great. Like this defense could be good up front, but I'm still like kind of doubtful about what the secondary is. Like considering the defensive, you know, kind of bona fides that he came in with, I don't really think this defense is delivered at all.
Yeah, I've actually think they've been better on offense than they've been on defense in his era. I mean, they've been a physical running team, and that they've been able to win games that way. But yeah, nothing about Pitt's defense in the Narduzzi era has really struck me as a wow. You know, that's a team you don't want to play because of the way they play defense.
Yeah, and like realistically, like I think most of their easier games on the schedule are on the road, or at least some of the easier games on the schedule are on the road. So like, yeah, I think 4-8 is reasonable. And like, I don't think Narduzzi's on the hot seat necessarily. He did just win a division and it is Pitt.
Right.
At the same time, like I think a 4-8 season sets the stage for, you know, a really kind of dicey 2020 for him though.
Yeah. I mean, it's today's college football with what these coaches are making, you can't be going backwards 2 years in a row. I think it's just, we see Steve Adazio, who has just kind of maintained that same seven wins, and people at BC want to get rid of him. And so that desire for fan bases, they're not going to be satisfied with, you know, winning a division one year and then going 4-8, and you can't follow that up with another losing season.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued to see what happens to Pitt this year. Obviously, I hope they lose, but I think that there's a lot on the table here for them, for Narduzzi. I think this season's pretty critical, following up on that surprise Coastal Championship. But lastly, Virginia Tech. So I know Bud Foster's leaving at the end of this year, which is going to be an interesting – it'll be interesting for this season, because they weren't that great on defense last year, and that was a surprise for the group. Obviously, like, Bud Foster's defenses have been a key part of what's been what's kept Virginia Tech so successful these past few decades.
Right.
I think this year's team, there's a lot of, like, last year's defense fell apart before the season even started. So the fact that that happened, I think, shouldn't really surprise people. I think the fact that now they have arguably the most experienced defense in the country should tell you a lot about kind of what's next. I actually think they're going to be really good on that end this year. And I think really what's going to decide things is, you know, Fuente kind of getting out of his own way on offense, where he was brought in to be, I think, a you know, offensive mind, obviously, to balance out Foster. And now, he's kind of got to deliver the goods on that end. I think Ryan Willis, we'll see if he's that guy to do it. I think that at least they have the schedule, though, you know, to make it happen. They got two FCS teams in Furman and Rhode Island. They have Old Dominion. They also have Notre Dame, though, which is a tougher matchup. I think this is a team that could potentially press for a division title. I think it ultimately might come down to that game at Virginia, though, to end the season.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think they're one of the teams that Bill sees. S&P predictions had them for 8 wins. Thought that they could be a breakout team with Willis coming back and Foster in the defense. And so the talent is there, and I think it's one of those, like every other team that we've been talking about in the division, it's like everybody is, for as much as you're excited about one thing, there's something else that makes you like, I'm just not sure about this team and what they're going to do. And so there's a lot back, and I think that first game for them too is big on the road to BC. They're probably going to get a health, you know, AJ Dillon's going to be as healthy as he will be all year before he gets run into the ground. And so can they get a road win right off the bat and start off their season? And again, get that momentum going, because like you said, the schedule is not that challenging for them. And then in the non-conference, and again, I'm a big, and I keep talking about momentum, but I think it's so big in college when you get teams going and you can get that sort of positive vibes going in the locker room and the coaches, everybody's sort of buying in. You'll then see the results on the field. Whereas flip side, where a team loses a couple games and, you know, offense turns on defense and there's finger pointing among the coaching staff and people are looking at their next job or next year, and then the wheels can come off quickly.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be an interesting one there, and I think some other places too. Just before we go, Kev, predicted order of finish in the Coastal. I'll just do mine. I wanted to say yours, if you have it, like top of mind. I'm going UVA, Miami, Virginia Tech, Duke, Pittsburgh, North Carolina, Georgia Tech.
So I would go Virginia. I'm going to go Virginia Tech, then Miami, Duke, Pittsburgh, UNC, Georgia Tech.
All right. Mostly similar. I think, yeah, like both have UVA to complete the Coastal Wheel of Mediocrity, as many have probably noticed by now. A different team wins the Coastal every year lately after starting out the division process with Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech kind of alternating years. So yeah, this would be the seventh different team in a row to win the Coastal if it happens. So
yeah, hopefully the people in Charlottesville will make, we made amends by picking them to win the division.
If they win the division, they're going to be super cool about it too, though. Like they're going to be like very humble. They're not going to tell everybody about it every week.
Yeah, so humble. Oh, Yeah, I mean, how much does the ACC want to go back and redraw these divisions? Because it was set up to be Florida State and Miami in every championship game, and those schools didn't, you know, Miami especially has not lived up to that end of the bargain. Must drive the people in Charlotte or Greensboro nuts, I should say.
Yeah, I'm sure if they could redo things, to be honest, I think they'd still put Miami in the other division just for the sake of Florida exposure.
Yep.
For the other teams, but yeah, the Florida State Miami pipe dream for championship games has not happened and might never happen. Who knows?
I kind of hope it never happens. I'll be good with that.
Yeah, same here, actually. Kevin, anything else before we head out for the week? I appreciate you coming on in Dan's stead this week.
No, thanks for having me. My first time on the flagship podcast edition. So appreciate Dan heading out to Italy to scout out restaurants for Boeheim in advance of the tour, and hopefully he's enjoying himself. And always happy to fill in, and I'll for next time I'll have some different beers for you guys.
Fair enough. Everybody, that was Kevin. I'm John. You've been listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Megaphone, on Stitcher, on Spotify. We're in a bunch of other places too, so just be sure to say nice things. And if you have not nice things to say, just email me, and then maybe we can fix them. Who knows? And go Orange.